Today's show is sponsored by nobody. I mean, this podcast is nowhere near popular enough to have a sponsor. It's the first episode, for crying out loud. Well, I mean, I'm not crying out loud, but someone is probably, right? Anyway, gang, thank you for joining me on my very first episode of Several Stories High. Today's story is about something that has driven fear and terror into my heart since I had a heart, since I saved up and bought one, like, a few years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And that is spiders. Now, I know a lot of people are afraid of spiders, and a lot of people are smart to do so. I don't know about you, when you see a spider, some people want to grab it and help it. Other people run away. I'm the kind of person that if I'm in my room or my house and I see a spider, I immediately go to my closet, I pack all my bags, I leave the house in that spider's name if I'm able to get it, and I never see that house again. I leave the fridge, all that furniture, TV, they can have it, because I'm terrified of spiders. And today's story is entitled Spiders, Part 1. I know, original, right? You know, there's an urban legend or myth or whatever you want to call it. It's been floating around for several years. I don't know how it floats. Don't ask me. But it's been floating around for several years that you're never more than 3 feet away from a spider at any given point. And if that's not terrifying enough, apparently some people can test this, say that it's less or more. Well, I don't ever want to be less than 10,000 miles from a spider, but that's just me. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to the first episode of Several Stories High. I'm Nathaniel David Knox. Shall we begin? Welcome to Several Stories High, a narrative podcast featuring original stories from all corners of the spectrum. Fiction, fact, or perhaps more appropriately, somewhere in the gray galaxies between. We'll explore a new tale every episode, together, climbing higher and higher as each new story stacks upon the last, like boundless building blocks, each a standalone in its own right, and at the same time, a piece of something bigger, like facets of a rare jewel, or fireflies in a deep, dark wood, shimmering with little glimmers of the vast, beautiful, and terrifying worlds around us, and inside of us. I'm Nathaniel David Knox. Let's see how high we can climb. Spiders were plotting against Percy Tricklebank. Of this, he was certain. It all started one morning on his way to work. You see, Percy was a customer service rep for the Medical Enhancement Hotline, or MEH for short. I'm sure you've heard of it, the swanky uptown office that gives medical evaluations and treatment all exclusively over the phone. And so there he was, Percy Tricklebank, barely 89 years old, his whole life ahead of him as he stepped out into the beautiful fresh morning sun. He locked the door of his bungalow, quickly adjusted his collar and fedora, and he was off, striding down the front sidewalk with a tune on his lips and a spring in his step. But suddenly, as if bursting into some sort of ancient impromptu aneurysm, Percy shouted and cursed and flailed his arms about, swatting and kicking at the air like a madman.
Spider web, ow! There's not even a twig of spider webs! I hate spider webs.
Across the street, an elderly Ethel Schnackel mumbled to her husband, Ray Ray, as the two sat on their front porch, rocking away and sipping on their steaming morning joe while reading their two identical copies of the latest issue of Porch Review magazine. Issue number 247, to be exact. An issue with a 10-page spread on support beams that would later be called by the Miami Snowmobile Warehouse and Emporium Monthly the single greatest work of journalistic ambition in all of the greater Milwaukee Industrial Park.
Oh, look at him, Ray Ray,
Ethel said.
Hooting and hollering and swinging his arms at nothing. The man's gone and lost it this time. Old bag. Not that we're young bucks over here, but, you know, still.
Ray said. I hate to say it, but he really does fit the old stereotype. To a T, matter of fact. Guy in his late 80s, lives in a bungalow, drives a station wagon, need I say more?
Oh, God, please don't. Practically has late 80s over-the-phone medical rep widower written all over him. I've seen the type 1,000 times, Ray. And this one's a certified loon. Guess he was bound to come unravel one of these days, though. Now pass me the vino, Ray. It's nearly 9 a.m., for God's sakes.
Ray passed the bottle of red vino, and then Ethel continued with her observations of Percy from afar.
And just who does he think he is anyhow, huh? Who's he trying to impress with that sport coat and fedora? Looks like some extra in a made-for-TV version of the Casablanca. I swear that man's stuck in the past. Probably because of all the gumshoe films.
Say, darling, that reminds me. Could you pick me up some of that white cheese dip I like next time you're over at the market? You know, either on 5th or maybe even the delicatessen on 3rd. I have no preference, said Ray.
Oh, my God. That's Queso Blanco, not the Casablancas.
My God, Ray, not you too?
I know the difference, woman. This is an entirely separate matter. You know how just talking about that movie gets me in the mood for dipping snacks? Be it made for TV or the original version, I have no particular preference.
But back at the bungalow, Percy paid no mind to the unintelligible chatter from his neighbors across the street. He was too busy trying to wipe away at the invisible webbing that now plagued both his mind and the lion's share of his corduroy blazer.
Get your filthy, fluffy devil webs off me, you conniving arachnids!
And with a downtrodden spirit, something he swore to his dying grammar school trumpet teacher he'd never, ever have, Percy got into his station wagon and headed off to work, the car's engine drowning out the porch side bickering of the schnockles as it passed, if only for a brief moment. Three mornings later, Percy stepped out to a cool, overcast day. He smiled, still slightly buzzed from his enormous cup of coffee and cream. This morning's choice was 3 scoops of Rocky Road. He locked the door to his bungalow, straightened his collar and fedora, and then began his routine stroll down the front walkway. But just before that familiar tune emerged from his thin lips, and just before that spring sprung from his step...
Oh, you've got to be kidding me! I'll kill you, you blasted spiders!
For the second time in only a week, Percy swiped away at the invisible webbing that now encased his very being. He wiped away pathetically, not knowing if the motions were even doing anything at all, and somehow at the same time knowing all the humiliation of such actions, designed solely to crush the human spirit. He felt as though he may burst into tears at any moment, and he couldn't tell exactly where the thin, spider-spun strands ended and his newfound misery truly began. Percy walked over to the station wagon and entered. But just before he closed the door, there was a noise. Laughter. Far, faint, laughter. Percy closed the door and pulled down the sun visor to make sure his eyes were not bloodshot on account of his coffee with 3 creams being dosed by some spirit of the Grateful Dead when a piece of paper fell into his lap. He unfolded it and read it to himself aloud.
You're playing a dangerous game there, pal. We suggest you stop tampering with our homes and livelihoods, or things might just get out of hand. Signed, the spiders.
Percy scowled. Surely he'd lost his mind this time. Spiders? Then he thought he smelled smoke. But he felt it more imperative to flee the awful scene then, and so he started the car and sped away, hoping desperately that his place of employment was fully staffed in the mental health department that morning, if not any other time. Once Percy's lunch hour had arrived, he scurried as fast as his 89-year-old legs would allow, passing dozens and dozens of cubicles, all teeming with little phone conversations such as, "Please hold, Mrs. Nethercoddle. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Nether... How do you say it, ma'am?"
"It's pronounced Smith, but don't blame yourself, darling. I'm used to it."
"My apologies." Or other conversations that seemed to poison Percy's paranoid well of a mind, like, "I can assure you, Mr. Eidelman, we of Met offer the latest and greatest in medical consultation and treatment. You're in good hands here, sir," a headset-wearing woman said.
"All right,"
Eidelman's voice replied through the phone.
I don't know. I'm a hypochondriac. I know this. It's been in my family genes ever since I was adopted as a 39-year-old, but, recently I've had this crippling fear that I've gone and contracted the pink eye or something. I don't know, maybe it's because of all those high school propaganda videos meant to scare the students, you know, from years back. I'm sure you saw the one about the potential eye health risks of love at first sight, but anyway, I'm just so afraid I'll get the pink eye and go blind. I'm sure you've heard these ramblings a million times. I mean, I've got no symptoms to speak of, and frankly, my eyes have never felt better. They're as white and clear and clean as a whistle, but still.
"Okay. Now don't worry, Mr. Eidelman. I'm now going to engage you using our advanced proprietary medical method regarding your current health predicament. Do I have your permission to proceed?"
Yes.
"All right. Thank you, Mr. Eidelman. Now here it goes."
"Please hurry."
"Mr. Eidelman, do you feel like you have pink eye?"
"Yes."
"All right. Let me just crunch some numbers here and there. Yes, Mr. Eidelman?"
"Yeah."
"Based on the previous question I just asked you, yes, it looks like you do in fact have pink eye. Most certainly. 100%. Congratulations."
"Oh, God. I knew it. I just knew it. JFK was right. Lincoln was right. Ford was right. All those car guys were right."
"Come now, Mr. Eidelman. Please stay on the line while we administer your prescription."
"What? My prescription? How?"
"Over the phone. It's stage 2 of our proprietary medical method. Much cheaper, and the company saves a fortune on the inventory that we don't actually give you."
"Oh, God. Wait a minute. Do my ears betray me, or were you asking for my hand in marriage earlier? Boy, nothing like pink eye to make you re-examine what's important in life. Hello? Are you still there?"
"Yes, Mr. Eidelman, I'm still here."
"Well, didn't you ask me to marry you earlier, phone lady?"
"How'd you get that, sir?"
"You said you wanted permission to engage me in something or the other. Well, I've made up my mind. Pink eye or no pink eye, I'm a new man. Give me your building number. I'll be right up. I'll bring flowers, daffodils, or maybe some beautiful poison ivies in that pot if it's open. What do you say, phone lady? How's about it?"
"Please hold while I transfer you." After shaking his head at such an exchange, Percy shoved Hank Midford into the empty conference room and drew the blinds and locked the door, shielding their location from all the vast multitudes of jabbering, meh employees. Hank spoke, obviously taken aback.
"Percy? What is it?"
"I'm very busy this week. I've had 4 calls. 2 wrong numbers in that freak campaign for sanitation services."
"You've got to help me, Hank. I think I'm going mad."
"How so, old sport?"
I think some spiders are conspiring against me. 2, maybe 3.
"Conspiring?"
"Yes, Hank. Conspiring. The other day I walked into a web in front of my house and, oh God, and then again today."
"Keep your voice down. You want to get us both killed?" Hank said. "You know the Dragon Lady's in from corporate, supervising the shift until Stutzman's back from his schwit. It's been weeks now."
"I'm telling you, Hank, they've been harassing me all week. And today I swear I heard them laughing at me. I know they were. And I think they smoked too. Menthols, probably. Figures.
Look, Hank said, putting a very patient hand on Percy's brittle, trembling shoulder. You're too uptight. You've been working here so long that your mind's playing tricks on you. Go home. Take some time off. Find you a nice girl and have some fun for a change, Percy. You're young, not even 90 yet.
No, Hank. Time off only made me think about it more. And you know it's been ages since I've been with a woman.
I'm sorry, old friend. Forgive me. How long's it been again since Julia?
Oh, it'll be 53 years, 10 Christmases from now. And honestly, looking back on it, I don't think our relationship ever really recovered after Julia passed.
Percy?
Yeah?
Go home.
From one friend to another. Go home.
The following Tuesday, Percy emerged from his bungalow and skipped all the usual pleasantries, and he looked to be a madman doing it, coming unfurled by the yardfuls in the process. With his snowy white head of hair and a mere cardigan around his bare, hairy chest, Percy inched his way down the sidewalk, poking forth with the pool skimmer to clear any such webbing lying in wait between he and his station wagon. Percy did not have a pool.
Easy does it.
He jabbed all around.
Easy does it.
And he jabbed and jabbed and jabbed, and it looked as though he were home free. He bounced his head back and forth as he passed the last tree, a measly 3 strides from his car. But then he looked to the ground. Bewildered, Percy knelt down and examined the tiny objects. They were 2 Copperhead brand menthol cigarettes, smoked right down to the filter. And when he stood back up,
No! How? My God, it's in my hair! You monsters, get out! Oh my God!
Once inside the station wagon, Percy started the engine more downtrodden than any 89-year-old customer service rep ever thought imaginable in that tax bracket. He puffed when the paper fell from the sun visor again, and again he read the slip of paper to himself aloud.
You think we were bluffing, old man. You want a war? Well, you got one, pal. And next time, you better bring something stronger than a pool skimmer, you wrinkly old chump. Signed, The Spiders. P.S. Your house is bringing the whole block's resale value down. A lot. Would clean gutters and a fresh coat of paint just kill you?
Percy could hear the laughing now, even from deep within his running car.
Has it really all come to this?
He thought.
This is not the 21st century. Did we not leave all this behind back in 45 after the Second World War? After VE and VJ and eventually Arbor Day?
Percy sighed. He shut off his car and went around the rear of the house to enter through his own back door and call the Dragon Lady to cash in all those personal days he saved up. And however many he had, he knew they wouldn't be enough. It had been 3 solid weeks since Percy had gone to work, and nothing indicated this more than his outlandishly disheveled appearance. He opened the door to his bungalow, which now boasted rolls and rolls of toilet paper strewn all over it, and there was rather shockingly cruel graffiti written all along the front. But Percy exited his home solely to get the paper at the end of the driveway, wearing nothing but swimming trunks and his corduroy blazer, and he now had no pool or pool skimmer. The shambles of a man called Percy Tricklebank walked down the front sidewalk like a barefoot zombie, a zombie with bushy white hair and a lollipop stuck to his back. And he merely dry wept as he walked through the inevitable spiderweb waiting for him, even despite the fact that he'd cut down every tree, bush, fence post, and weed on his property. But somehow, they still managed to build their web, and somehow Percy had still managed to walk through it. Now bearded with tangled web and despair, Percy grabbed the plastic-wrapped newspaper at the end of the driveway, and he started back for the house when a red pickup truck pulled up to the curb. "My God, Percy, is that you?" Percy turned around and answered Hank Midford via his red, baggy eyes.
"Afraid so, old friend."
"Oh, Lord. This isn't still about those stupid spiders. Still? Come now, Percy, you can't be serious."
"It's true," Percy said. "Tensions have reached an all-time high. Those eight-legged freaks have crushed my spirit, I tell you. Crushed. Death threats, graffiti, even the dog."
"My God, they kidnapped your dog? I'm sorry, Percy. I didn't even know you had a dog."
"I don't. They broke in and left one here. Now I've got to worry about those evil smoking arachnids and the three-legged collie you have to walk 3 to 5 times a day around my kitchen."
"Here," Hank said. "I'm going to write down the number for an excellent therapist I dated a while back. Dr. Maxwell. She's excellent. Nothing like the folks at the quack factory we work at. And if she doesn't answer, then just try her website. Here, I'll write that down too."
"Hank?"
Percy said slowly. "Yeah, Purse?"
"The what site?"
"I said the web..." "Oh, come now, Percy. You can't be serious."
"Leave, Hank. Just go."
Hank sighed. "All right, Percy. Suit yourself. Godspeed, old sport. Do get better now." With a final somber head shake, Hank drove away. Percy turned and started his first step back towards the house, but then another vehicle pulled up to the same curb. It was a shimmering black town car.
"Hank, I told you to go,"
Percy said.
"Just leave me be and stay out of it."
But as Percy turned around to curse at his friend some more, he saw that Hank was nowhere to be found, and an unknown town car with dark windows was now right in front of him. Percy froze and said,
Who are you?"
He inched forward with both anger and trepidation.
"I said, who are..."
Down rolled the window, letting out clouds of menthol cigarette smoke. A fat, hairy spider gripped the wheel with several hairy limbs. He was pointing a shiny revolver directly at Percy with the others. A second spider, just as fat and hairy as the driver, spoke from the passenger seat through the haze.
"Get in the car, old man. We saw what you just did. You destroyed the home of some very good friends of ours. Hard-working folk that didn't do anything to deserve such a disrespectful show of destruction. And my business associates here might have thought it was funny. But I didn't. This madness has gone on for long enough. Now get in the car."
Percy almost ran, but he stopped when he heard the click of the revolver's hammer.
"I said, get in the car."
Percy walked over to the vehicle and opened the door and slowly entered into the back seat. Once inside, he coughed violently. A third spider was sitting in the back seat with him. He too had an aimed pistol poised.
"What do you want?"
The car began to roll.
"And where are we going? Where are we going?"
"On a little ride,"
the spider in the passenger seat said.
"Won't be long."
Percy began to cry. But right before the tears morphed his voice into pure gibberish, he managed to say,
"You wonder why people hate spiders so much. It's because of stuff like this."
"Shut up,"
said the spider in the passenger seat.
"Let's go, Frank. Step on it."
All right, I'm stepping."
The town car drove out of the neighborhood, and Percy watched his whole world drift by through the smoke, knowing that his time had finally come. He prayed to the heavens to be spared. He had no family to speak of save for his single younger cousin, Emma, who lived with her husband in England.
God, if you're up there,
Percy whispered in the smoky back seat.
Do you think you could spare me? Huh? Could you get this prayer to Emma? Not sure how this all works. Not like a simple electronic message. Anyway, please, send an angel or a dove or whatever you can to my dear cousin. Honestly, I'd even settle for a fortune cookie at this point. Tell her I need her help. These spiders are gonna kill me. And also, if I don't make it out alive, please allow my home to be burned to the ground. There are several websites I'm not so proud of visiting.
Hey!
Yelled the spider next to Percy.
What are you mumbling about, you mumbling, stuttering mukia? Shut it!
Percy nodded and closed his eyes as the arachnid-filled town car sped down the turnpike towards an almost certain fate. Almost. But that's the thing about almost. It teeters, hovering mid-air between the impossible and just maybe, like a trapeze artist in perpetual limbo. And as the black town car sped down the turnpike, a husband and wife were almost done with their meal at a Chinese restaurant in a sleepy British suburb over 4,000 miles away.
Well, I suppose we'll be off now,
said the husband.
Are you quite through, love?
I think so. Good lo mein this time. You think?
Darling, I'd rather not say, but I do believe it's time to go.
But as her husband rose from the table, a rush of unction swept over her, a feeling of urgency so powerful that she did what her gut told her to before the next blink.
A fortune cookie,
said the husband.
In all of our days, I've never seen you take one of those silly things.
They're only silly if they don't come true. She cracked it open and her face froze.
Emma? What is it, love?
She handed her husband Nigel the tiny sliver of paper and he read it. And his jaw soon dropped too at the 10 tiny words. Emma, it's your cousin Percy. I've been kidnapped. Help.
Nigel, darling,
Emma said, bolting up from the table, now too determined and jolted to be confused.
Yes, yes, dear. We have to find Percy. I know it deep in my gut something's wrong. If this is real or fake, I don't know, but we've got to find him. I don't have a good feeling about this.
You sure it wasn't just the low main? I thought it was a bit hard, you ask me.
I'm serious. We need to get on the next plane to the States.
Yes, yes, I suppose we will. You are his only cousin, after all. And I'm very proud of the way that you comforted him after Julia passed. I don't think they ever quite recovered after she died. They never acted the same around one another. And I should certainly know better than to question your intuition by this point. All right, love, we'll go. Next flight. Though I'm not looking forward to that. It could take several podcast episodes to cross the pond.
Nigel?
I mean, it could take several hours to cross that pond. I'm not looking forward to that. But I shall suck it up. For you, my love, and for Percy, and for the frequent flyer miles, and a very, very distant third.
Very funny, Nigel, but the clock's ticking. We don't have a moment to lose. Let's go,
Emma said. They left the restaurant in a flash, rushing home to pack before heading to the airport to board the next plane to the States. Today's episode of Several Stories High was written, composed, and produced by me, Nathaniel David Knox. Thank you for listening. We'll continue with part two of our story, entitled Spiders, in a future episode very soon, because, as Nigel himself said to Emma, it could take several podcast episodes to cross that pond, and as someone who's taken that trip personally, I can certainly vouch for him and say, dat a whole lot of water. So be on the lookout for more stories between now and then. You can learn more about me and the show over at severalstorieshigh.com. And if you have a chance, could you leave me a review on iTunes? I'd greatly appreciate it. After all, was it not William Shakespeare himself who said, one encouraging iTunes review is worth more than 600 clucking hens? I have no idea, honestly. And lastly, remember to keep up with the show on Facebook and Twitter. That's at SSHpod, or Shpod if you prefer. Just remember there's two S's though. Again, that's at SSHpod. Until next time, I'm Nathaniel David Knox, and thanks for listening.